Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Right now on News One Now, there are several developments in the Flint, Michigan case. The governor, he apologizes. Lawsuits have been filed. The president meets with the mayor of Flint. Also, we'll talk with a woman who has been, a victim impacted by this, plus the attorney who's filing one of those lawsuits. Daniel Hosklaw, the cop. Well, former cop who raped 13 black women. Well, he is going to be sentenced tomorrow. And a local advocacy group, they want to keep the attention on his case. We'll talk with OKC Art for Justice. The Supreme Court, they're going to examine President Barack Obama's immigration executive order. Is it legal or not? Also, a blogger out of L.A. says it's time for white liberals to boycott the Oscars because of the whitewash, not black folks. Plus, Whoopi Goldberg caused a little controversy on The View with her comments. We'll have all of that for you. And, of course, comedian actor Jamie Foxx, he also is being hailed as a real-life hero for saving a man's life. Plus, it's hump day. So you know we're getting a little wild with our comedians. Folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One.
And I will fix it.
That was residents of outside the Michigan State House demanding the resignation of Michigan Governor Rick Snyder in the wake of the Flint, Michigan water crisis. Last night, the governor gave his state of the state address where he immediately apologized and also announced he is going to release emails about the emergency. He also promised the National Guard will make sure every household in Flint has a water filter and that the state is, and he also said, frankly, the state did fail the residents.
No citizen of this great state should endure this kind of catastrophe. Government failed you, federal, state, and local leaders, by breaking the trust you placed in us. I'm sorry most of all that I let you down. You deserve better. You deserve accountability. You deserve to know that the buck stops here with me.
Before the address, Flint Mayor Karen Weaver met privately with President Barack Obama here in D.C. This is a photo of her also meeting with White House Senior Advisor Valerie Jarrett. Now, residents say the emergency declaration is not enough. There are now two class action lawsuits against county and state officials. Trishelle Young is an attorney involved in the lawsuit. She joins us via Skype right now from Flint. Also, Mercedes Kinney is a Flint resident who is on Skype. Mercedes, I want to go to you first, and that is, give our viewers a sense how you have been personally impacted by this water crisis.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to say thank you for inviting me to speak about the catastrophe that has happened here in Flint. I'm a resident of Flint since I've been a resident of Flint since I was a child. The water crisis has impacted us to the point that we cannot take baths, we cannot brush our teeth, and the water that we were receiving prior to now was so bad and smelled so bad that you wouldn't believe it. It had a smell like a rotten egg or something to that effect. It was brown. And they were coming out periodically and flushing out the hydrants on the street. And this has been going on for over a year. No one came to our rescue. There were cries from all nationalities of people trying to get someone to listen to us, and no one cared. I have a son that's on dialysis. They couldn't take a bath. I couldn't take a bath. It was so bad until the water that we were receiving out of the Flint River was so bad years ago, we wouldn't even eat the fish out of the river. At least only drink the water. And here comes these people that knew everything they says to us, you have to drink this water. We knew nothing about it. As citizens in this city, we knew nothing about them changing over. All we heard was, this is what they did, and this is how it was going to be. We have people that their skin broke out. My skin took on some bumps, and my face took on some pimples and things that I had to go to a doctor about. This has been so bad until, and let me address this here first of all. The governor cannot just give us bottles of water because we cannot take a bath.
Hold tight 1 second, Trishelle. You filed a lawsuit here, and is Mercedes one of your clients, Trishelle?
Mercedes has petitioned to be a member of our class action, correct.
Who are you targeting in this lawsuit?
Oh, Roland, the question is, who aren't we targeting? I mean, as far as we're concerned, Flint, Michigan is a crime scene, and the people that are involved, from the governor on down, all of the folks that he self-appointed, that have literally taken the voice of the people from the residents of the city of Flint, they are all liable. They need to be held accountable. So we are targeting not only the governor, all of the emergency managers along the way that came into Flint and made these decisions and completely disregarded the health, welfare, and safety of residents.
We're talking about, first of all, there have been some 10 deaths. You've had some, you got 27,000 children the Michigan State and others are looking at. And so certainly this is a major deal. You heard what the governor said last night, Trishelle. Your response to his comments?
My response is too little, too late. It's not enough. We're talking about a catastrophe that's going to cost in billions of dollars that need to be done. We need the Army Corps of Engineers to come in the city of Flint and completely rebuild our infrastructure.
You're breaking up there the audio. Folks, I need y'all to fix that. Mercedes, I want to go to you. Your response to Governor Rick Snyder, his comments last night, his apology, and his plea that he'll fix it.
His apology came a day late and a dollar short. His apology came only after it became such a wide world, people learned about us and what was happening, he had to come out and say something. This man, this governor knew about what was going on in the city of Flint, and people in his administration knew about what was going on because we read about it in the paper. People resigned under his administration because of what was happening in Flint. And now he wants to come out and say, jeepers, you guys, I want to be right there for you. Where was he at a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago? This is what we're concerned about. You cannot just take this and say, as usual, we're going to give you a bottle of water.
Gotcha.
Again, a bottle of water is not going to do it.
All right, then. First of all, Mercedes and Trishelle, we certainly appreciate it. And again, we're going to keep staying on top of this story and follow it. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you,
Roman.
I'm going to go to my panel here. Rena Shaw Barrara, Republican political strategist and consultant. Chris Metzler, political scientist and president and CEO of FHW Fit. Plus Yolanda Young, columnist and attorney with Lawyers of Color. Folks, there's no doubt. I mean, look, there are going to be a ton of lawsuits here in this particular case here. And no doubt, Michigan has a problem.
Michigan does have a problem. You're right. And I think beginning with the governor, we have to place blame where it needs to be. And this governor, though, I have to tell you, the emergency response has been swift. He's been good to put out such an emergency response. There's a time for politicizing this, and that time is not right now.
I have to interrupt you. Governor Snyder has said that this is his Katrina. He's being too easy on himself. This is akin to the Tuskegee experiments. This was a state-sanctioned action. They chose to forgo spending $100 a day to treat this water, and they risked the lives of almost 30,000 children.
Sure.
There is nothing good about this. If Dr. Mona hadn't come forward, last year, they would probably still be hiding paperwork. And I tell you what, I can't wait to see those emails.
I agree, it was wrong. And to bring this class action suit, I think it's completely called for. I encourage it. I hope there's not a miscarriage of justice as this goes through. But we can't place blame right now. We can't politicize this right now.
Why not?
We've got to bring the emergency response swiftly.
But Chris, part of the problem here was the governor was late in even requesting the emergency response. I mean, this continued. The governor wouldn't even visit the city of Flint to see what's going on. It wasn't until this thing continued to rise to a national level when all of a sudden the governor was like, oh, I kind of got to act.
Yeah, and it seems to me, okay, so I get that we can't politicize it. However, I think we have to be clear on the facts here. The governor aided and abetted in this particular case, the behavior that went on. He absolutely knew what was going on. And this whole conversation about, well, there was a special monitor and he decided not to spend the money, it's the governor's responsibility. The governor knew that, and the governor needs to take swift action.
I mean, he's released the communications. There's Freedom of Information Act where people can go and see what was lost there.
All right, then, hold tight 1 second, folks. We're going to go to our next story here. And that is tomorrow in Oklahoma City. Daniel Holtzclaw, the former Oklahoma City cop found guilty of raping several black women while on duty, is going to be sentenced. Last month, a jury convicted him, recommending he serve a total of 263 years in prison. Now activists are pushing for more changes ahead of his sentencing. Joining me now via Skype from Oklahoma City is Candace Elijah, the co-founder of OKC Artists for Justice. Candace, what are you looking for folks to do in this particular sentencing here that takes place tomorrow?
So we have two real big days ahead of us. Today is the day of visibility. So today, January 20th, we have two online campaigns. We're using hashtag Say Her Name, Black Women Matter, and Visible, the number 4, Justice. And we are encouraging women and supporters of sexual assault survivors to share their stories online using those hashtags. So you can find that Facebook page, is an event page, January 20th, Day of Visibility. That's going to be all over the nation, hopefully. And we really want to promote the idea that when we share our stories, we can actually hold perpetrators accountable. It's the silence that gets us, right? And so we have also a forum that's going to take place, if you're in Oklahoma City, tonight from 6 to 8 at Langston University. OKC will have Kimberly Crenshaw come down. She's the founder of the African American Policy Forum, Barbara Arnwine. We're going to have Benjamin Crump, who represented Trayvon in the civil suit, and just a slew of heavy hitters on our panel. We'll be discussing some of the intimate details of the case, along with how we can move forward after the sentencing date to continue addressing these issues. And of course, the 21st at 10 a.m. The sentencing starts.
You're also hoping from the justice system that the sentence in terms of not be concurrent, correct?
Exactly. We are hoping for a consecutive sentence. So he was convicted of 18 of the 36 counts, which equated to 263 recommended years by the jury. And so we want those charges to be served consecutively so that he is sentenced with all 263. If it's charged concurrently, then the max he could possibly actually serve is 30 years. And of course, that's not justice for 8 women and 18 counts of sexual assault. So absolutely, consecutively is the goal.
And also, obviously, you have several victims who have stepped out there and gone public. Attorney Ben Crump has been hired by a couple of them as well. And so we do expect also lawsuits to follow. And so I'm quite sure you and others are hoping the Oklahoma City Council will do justice to these women as well.
Exactly. There are some civil lawsuits being present. Benjamin Crump is handling that. We've had two of the survivors, Janie Liggins and Shadarion Hill, that have really been in the forefront and sharing their stories and have kind of become the face of the survivor movement at this point. And so we can only hope that the rest of them, and there are other civil lawsuits that from women that may not have been represented in this criminal trial that still are filed. And so we're expecting more favorable results to be returned.
All right, then, well, Candace, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot, and thanks, and continue pressing the case there and demanding justice in this case.
Thank you for having me. We really appreciate you covering it.
Thanks a bunch. Again, folks, today, use hashtags beginning at 1 p.m. That is hashtag say her name, hashtag black women matter, hashtag it's not over. And also, you can share your poem, reflection, or artistic expression about sexual assault and black women on Facebook and Twitter as well. And so please do so. All right, folks, real quick here. Again, first of all, you talk about citizens' response. I mean, this group and others, they were live tweeting during the trial. Again, national media totally ignored this. So thank goodness they were there and keeping the pressure and the attention on this case.
Indeed. I think one of the biggest problems is that we don't say the names of these women. We know the names of the perpetrators, and so much attention is on these perpetrators. And unfortunately, this gentleman has garnered all that attention, and we hope that it certainly plays out in the favor of these women.
Absolutely. I would also like to just say I'm thrilled to see that Professor Kimberly Crenshaw is a part of this movement. She was someone who was responsible for critical race theory being taught in law schools, and it's wonderful to see lawyers getting involved in this in an advocacy capacity.
All right, folks, hold tight one second. Coming up next, we, of course, have latest developments in the Freddie Gray trial in Baltimore. Also, it may look like a scene from a movie, but Jamie Foxx was not acting when he saved a man's life in California. And also, should white liberals be standing up when it comes to diversity in Hollywood? Well, we have a blogger who says they should be leading a boycott of the Oscars. 15 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A pretrial motion hearing is scheduled for later today in Baltimore for four cops charged in the death of Freddie Gray. The judge will hear a motion to strike a court order compelling testimony from a fifth officer, William Porter. Prosecutors want to call him to testify in court proceedings against Sergeant Alicia White, Officer Garrett Miller, Officer Edward Nero, and Lieutenant Brian Rice. Porter's trial ended in December with a mistrial. He'll be retried in June. The sixth officer charging Gray's death, Cesar Goodson, was supposed to begin this week, but it has been put on hold until the court decides whether to order Porter to testify. Officials in Kentucky are investigating the mysterious death of a 16-year-old girl. Janaea McMillan was found dead while under the supervision of a Kentucky State Juvenile Detention Center on the 11th of January. The Hardin County coroner claims his initial examination of the body showed no outward signs that could signal a cause of death. The results from a full autopsy will not be available for weeks. Information as to why McMillan was at the detention center is unclear at this time. Meanwhile, the girl's family say they have received very few details from officials. The Kentucky Department of Juvenile Justice, state and local law enforcement agencies have all launched investigations, and will certainly keep an eye on this case and continue to give you updates as they become available. A St. Paul, Minnesota cop who allegedly encouraged drivers to run over members of the Black Lives Matter movement has been suspended. The officer was referring to protesters participating in a march on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The statement posted on the Facebook page of Sergeant Jeffrey Rothlicher stated in part, quote, run them over, keep traffic flowing, and don't slow down for any of these idiots who try and block the street. Since they are trying to block the street and or cross where there is no crossing, you should not be charged with anything. The St. Paul Police Department posted a statement on their Facebook page saying, quote, if it is determined that the comment was written by a member of the St. Paul Police Department, swift, strong, and decisive disciplinary action will be taken. Folks, should this guy be fired?
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we can definitely agree on that bit.
I mean, it's like, so you, yeah, just run them over. I'm a cop. I'm giving y'all a license. Just mow them down.
Right. Can we give a shout out to citizen journalists? I mean, someone, you know, there was a time when newspapers would track this kind of information.
Right.
Now we have to rely on citizen journalists. There was a citizen journalist who was tracking his page, saw that post, and alerted officials to this.
Well, thank goodness, because that's kind of cop you don't want trying to protect citizens.
Absolutely.
Folks, anyone looking to become Chicago's next top cop should expect questions on how they plan to deal with the so-called code of silence among officers. This after the fallout from the resignation of previous Chicago police superintendent Gary McCarthy. All applicants will be asked for creative ways to motivate police officers to report misconduct from other officers. This is the same police department that withheld a video of Laquan McDonald being shot 16 times by police officer Jason Van Dyke for over a year. Also, keep in mind, this is the same police department that also went to the Burger King and also erased portion of the video they claimed didn't happen. Folks, to me, this is not coming up with creative ways. What you simply do is make a department policy and city policy. If you do not report misconduct, if you lie on police reports, you will be fired.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Simple as that.
I mean, that's the only way. I mean, because otherwise you're never going to be able to get cops to actually do what's right. To say, oh, can y'all just somehow... on your own.
Law enforcement's gotten a little too, I guess you could say, ballsy about this.
A little?
Okay. You know, truth be told, you have to put down hard rules and regulations like that on our law enforcement to keep them in check.
Well, you have to put it down and you have to enforce it.
Precisely. That's
which
the
is the
that's
other true. Portion of it. Because without the enforcement, what difference does it make?
Well, what I find interesting is unions are being broken up all over this country. But not the police union.
Well, of course not. All right, folks, Oscar award-winning actor Jamie Foxx is being hailed as a hero for rescuing a man from a burning truck near his home in L.A. After hearing the truck skid off the road, flip, and turn upside down, Foxx called 911, then ran to the scene. Foxx explains what happened next.
Hits the window, we clear the glass. I climb in, and I try to hit his seatbelt, but he's hovered over, so the seatbelt is on him. And so I grab the scissors from him, cut the seatbelt, and when he extends out of the cabin, pull him out. And as we pull him out, within 5 seconds later, the truck goes up.
The man went to the hospital and was treated for burns and non-life-threatening injuries. The 32-year-old driver suffered third-degree burns and a broken collarbone. He was arrested on suspicion of DUI. But way to go, Jamie.
Way to go. That's right.
All right, Ted. All right, folks, coming up next, we'll deal with the issue of immigration. Supreme Court, yes, they will look into President Barack Obama's executive order. Also, boycotts, Facebook videos, tweets, the Oscars, so white controversy has Hollywood and social media on fire. But one blogger says white liberals should be the one boycotting, not African Americans. We'll talk with Jasmine Koenig. Plus, Wild Night Wednesday, our comedians, of course, they're here for the funny. All of that. Next on News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. With Roland Martin.
Folks, the U.S. Supreme Court has announced it will consider a legal challenge to President Obama's executive order on immigration.
First, we'll build on our progress at the border with additional resources for our law enforcement personnel so that they can stem the flow of illegal crossings and speed the return of those who do cross over. Second, I'll make it easier and faster for high-skilled immigrants, graduates, and entrepreneurs to stay and contribute to our economy, as so many business leaders have proposed. Third, we'll take steps to deal responsibly with the millions of undocumented immigrants who already live in our country. I want to say more about this third issue because it generates the most passion and controversy. Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws, and I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. That's why over the past 6 years, deportations of criminals are up 80%. And that's why we're going to keep focusing enforcement resources on actual threats to our security. Felons, not families. Criminals, not children. Gang members, not a mom who's working hard to provide for her kids. We'll prioritize, just like law enforcement does every day.
Now, the justices will decide if President Obama had the authority to halt the deportation of up to 5 million immigrants living in the U.S. illegally. A 2014 policy, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, also known as DAPA, a law allows some adults that have been here illegally for more than 5 years to stay as long as they don't have criminal records. Also provides protection for young immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children. The court expected to hear the case in April, issue a decision by June. Joining us on the phone from D.C. is Laura Vasquez, NCLR Senior Immigration Legislative Analysis Immigration Policy Project. So, Laura, what do you make of this legal challenge? You've had folks, of course, they have sued in various states. Texas was one of those. You've had some federal judges declare this unconstitutional. But what do you make of the Supreme Court saying they will hear this challenge?
This is an incredible moment for folks who have been following this carefully and who know that the president has been making this decision as a result of two things. One is that he does have the authority to decide how federal resources should be used. So his decision to take this step was based on strong legal and historical precedent, but it was also important that the court take this up because the reason why we got to this point is that the president had to act because Congress had failed to do its job. Back in 2013, if you'll remember, the Senate had passed a bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform bill, a law that would address the issues that affect our immigration system. Unfortunately, the House of Representatives never took up that bill, never came up with any solution to fix our broken immigration system, which is why President Obama in November of 2014 said, using his authority, he would make these programs available that would allow individuals who come forward and apply and are screened eligible to get this temporary reprieve from deportation. So it's always been, in our opinion, steps that were practical, that have strong legal precedent, and that are good for the country. So we're very excited that the Supreme Court is going to hear the case. We believe that the legal issues will be sorted out and that we look forward to the implementation of these programs so that the nearly 4 million people who have been waiting for these programs to be able to begin so that they can come forward and apply and receive this reprieve from deportation.
Is the National Council of La Raza, though, concerned that this Supreme Court, which is a conservative Supreme Court with four hardcore conservatives, and you have your swing vote, Anthony Kennedy, who is a moderate conservative, could very well strike down this executive order and then throw again all this issue into limbo?
Well, we don't have a crystal ball to predict how the court will decide, but we are confident that the Department of Justice has a very strong case to make, that they have laid out all the historical precedent for why the president does have the authority. This is an established legal and historical precedent. In fact, presidents going back for decades, presidents from both parties, both Republicans and Democrats, have used their executive authority
right
on immigration specifically. So we're very confident in the precedent, and we're also joined in our confidence by governors like from states like California and other states who have joined as friends of the court in joining the administration and saying the president was right. There is an opportunity here for the country to benefit from this. They're eager to implement this in their states. They're also joined by law enforcement officials, former heads of immigration from previous administrations. So there is strong confidence from folks across sectors that the court will ultimately decide this in a way that benefits the country.
Laura Vasquez, National Counsel, La Raza, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Look at my panel here. Look, supporters of the president say this is not about immigration, that this is a clear attack on the president's constitutional authority to issue executive orders.
Entirely. I'm with Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, who says that this is an affront to our system of Republican self-government. The president is attempting to unilaterally rewrite the law here. And I want to add that I'm the daughter of immigrants, two people who immigrated here legally in the 70s and 80s. And I tell you, I feel pretty offended by this, because with the swipe of a pen, what the president did is made it okay for 4.3 million people to have broken our law. This is a nation of laws, like he said. Laws were broken by these people. I don't think they should be rewarded for it.
I completely disagree with you, Rena. First of all, particularly on the issue of immigration, presidents have historically done things and decided what their policies were going to be, what their mandates were going to be, because you can't, I mean, there are millions of immigrants here. You can't possibly think that you're going to deport all of those that are here and aren't documented. This seems very much in the line of what President Obama has the authority to do, and quite frankly, I mean, it's certainly less vague than was the Affordable Care Act. So I'm very confident that the court will uphold it.
Yeah, see, I don't think the president has the authority to do this. And this silly argument that the president has acted because Congress has failed to act is nonsensical. Look, you cannot have a president legislating. That's what's happened in this particular case. The president said, okay, so they've not done what they're supposed to do, so I'm going to become a legislator. There's a small thing called separation of powers. And I think also, if we look very carefully, they added this piece. The Supreme Court added this question. The question was whether or not the president faithfully executed his duties. That's a question that they also have to address. And this notion that somehow we're confident that the court's going to make a decision that will, quote unquote, benefit the country, the court's going to strike this down. And so this notion of precedent, and I'm hearing people talking about there's precedent. How many times has this court struck precedent down? I mean,
Well, if they strike it down, that is what they will be doing. Particularly in lines of immigration, presidents do have the authority to make certain decisions about, you know, what is the proper way to allocate those resources. And these are, and to make the decision that if you are a law-abiding citizen, that you are parents of Americans, that seems perfectly reasonable.
Question about the resources. The whole question the court is taking up is the constitutional authority vested in him? And the answer is no. It's vested in our Congress. Even though they failed to act, does not mean, like you said, that the power shifts to our president. That raises a very dangerous precedent here if the president is allowed to unilaterally act like he did.
All right, hold tight 1 second, folks. We'll certainly see what the court does. It's going to be a little while before they get to it, but we'll see.
True,
coming up, should white liberals be stepping up and boycotting the Oscars next month? We'll talk with a blogger from Los Angeles, Jasmine Kaney, who says absolutely. Plus, we're bringing the funk in our Wilding Out segment with our comedians. And right along to King of the Box Office brings down Star Wars. So we'll tell you the final numbers, the final tally. All of that next on News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, the Oscars so white controversy continues to make headlines, prompting a number of folks in Hollywood to speak out on the issue. You have, of course, Spike Lee, Jada Pinkett. They say they will not be attending. The two stars announced this just the other day. Now, here's what also happened now. Shira Boone Isaacs, who is the president of the Academy, of course, she's the first African-American to head the Academy, released this statement, quote, I'd like to acknowledge the wonderful work of this year's nominees. While we celebrate their extraordinary achievements, I am both heartbroken and frustrated about the lack of inclusion. This is a difficult but important conversation, and it's time for big changes. And of course, in her announcement, she announced that they're going to immediately move on that. But also yesterday on The View, Whoopi Goldberg, of course, Oscar winner, who has also hosted the show before, also spoke out about the boycott.
Boycotting doesn't work, and it's also a slap in the face of Chris Rock.
By
and
way,
I find that also wrong. So I'm not going to boycott, but I'm going to continue to, as I have all year round, because I'm tired of seeing movies where no one is represented except a bit of the population.
I don't think all of it.
Well, it's interesting there. So when Whoopi says that, well, boycotts don't work, actually they do. There's a history of that. You know, just saying. But also, political and social commentator Jasmine Kaney, she wrote a blog on yesterday where she actually talked about this, and she said the whole issue in terms of she says white liberals should step up. They should be the ones boycotting, not African Americans. Jasmine joins us right now via Skype. Jasmine, good to see you. So explain to us your argument in terms of this, because you have African Americans who are voicing, and you do have a handful of whites who have said something. Shelley, go to my iPad, please. George Clooney, Variety posted this yesterday, Jasmine, where George Clooney he said that, look, he said, we're seeing some movement. He said it was amazing in the 30s women had so many leading roles. He said, but the problem we have is I think that African Americans have a real fair point that the industry isn't representing them well enough. I think that's absolutely true. He went on to say, let's look back at the nominees. He talked about 2004. He talked about Will Smith this year, Idris Elba, as well as Ava DuVernay last year. He said, but honestly, there should be more opportunity than that. There should be 20 or 30 or 40 films of the quality that people would consider for the Oscars. By the way, we're talking about African Americans. For Hispanics, it's even worse. We need to get better at this. We used to be better at it.
Right. It's really easy to say that from a seat of privilege. I'm happy that Mr. Clooney is speaking up, and I think more of his colleagues need to do the same. I think at the end of the day, it's an easy out to call on blacks to boycott the Oscars. I mean, come on, if every single one of us tuned out and didn't watch the Oscars, it wouldn't really hurt their bottom line. It wouldn't really make much of a difference. But I think when, you know, you talk about a Cate Blanchett, you talk about a Matt Damon, you talk about a George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and those folks, you know, stand up and say, look, we're going to sit this one out in support of our you know, African-American colleagues, I think that sends a much stronger message to the 93% of the voting academy who is white and the 74% that is male.
Got to ask you this here. So in the statement from Cheryl Boone Isaacs, she said this here. This isn't unprecedented for the Academy in the 60s and 70s. It was about recruiting younger members to stay vital and relevant. In 2016, the mandate is inclusion in all of its facets, gender, race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. We recognize the very real concerns of our community. And so I appreciate all of you who have reached out to me in an effort, in our effort to move forward together. But again, I think the point that you're making is, look, we see how black folks are going to respond. The question is, will major white celebrities say, I'm not going to show up? Will you have those female actresses who say, I'm not going to walk the red carpet. I'm going to stand in solidarity raising this issue. You know, Jennifer Lawrence wants folks to do it when it comes to income inequality for actresses. And Chris Rock said, baby, if you were a black actress, you'd be a whole different conversation.
Absolutely. I think we need to look at the bigger picture. Again, if the gay community was screaming foul because of the Oscars, folks would be standing up left and right to support the gay community. And it should be no different with the African-American community, especially coming from Hollywood, who is known for being the most liberalist of the liberal, correct? Everyone, you know, supports everyone. It's equality for all. Well, you know what? They need to put their money where their mouth is right now. I think it's more than lip service. I don't want to see folks accept awards in their fancy furs and jewels and dresses and do some sort of political speech about, you know, the lack of black folks and then go backstage to do a ton of media interviews. No. Sometimes being an ally, means you have to get up and actually do something. And I think African Americans, especially in black Hollywood, deserve better from their white colleagues. And this is that point in time when they can actually do something. Stay away from the red carpet. You know, stay away from the ceremony. Stand with your colleagues. If you really believe that blacks should be treated equal and that you feel that this is atrocious, that no blacks were nominated, show it.
I want to go to our panel here. What do you think about that, what Jasmine is saying, that white actors and actresses need to step up on this and not to say African-Americans, it's all on you?
Well, it shows the hypocrisy of white liberals to begin with. Because from my perspective, all of the conversation tends to be from white liberals, oh, don't be a member of the Republican Party because that party is so exclusive. White liberals are the problem. It shows the hypocrisy. She's absolutely right in this particular case. Put up or shut up and stop giving me these platitudes and these speeches that mean absolutely nothing. Stay your behind at home. Let's see how that works. No, you're not going to do that because the Oscars are self-congratulatory. Everybody patting each other on the back. They don't really care, in my view, about whether or not blacks are represented. What do they care?
And there's a problem here. The Academy is stacked with older white men as their voting population. You know, Roland, 94% of CEOs and chairs of motion picture studios, white. That tells you there's a problem here. This guild has a problem. I think boycotting it would be certainly a wake-up call. Michael Moore, somebody who I don't normally tip my hat to, last night came out on NBC saying that he would be boycotting too. So maybe that's a step in the right direction, as Jasmine said. White liberals need to boycott.
Jasmine, the issue for me here, this is what I keep telling people, this is not about some awards. This is about economics. This is about not just actors and actresses. This is about sound mixers, costume designers, craft Great. Services, limousines. This is about producers, directors. This is about an entire industry that has essentially frozen most minorities out, very few. And as Spike Lee said, the only person I'm going to see is the brother sitting at the door when I check in at the security desk. That's about it.
I absolutely agree. As someone who's produced a couple of films myself, I agree. When we talk about the Oscars, we're talking about opportunities, right? So we're taking away, but the fact that African Americans are not being nominated means they're losing many opportunities. And like you said, not just sort of the actors and the actresses, but it's also the people behind the scenes. I know last night, one of the things that I was thinking really heavily on was Marlon Brando and what Marlon Brando did when he was nominated and then did in fact win the Oscar for The Godfather. It'd be so great in 2016 if we had some of our, you know, white counterparts in Hollywood sort of take up that sort of action and do those types of things that say, look, yes, it's more than just lip service we're paying. We're actually standing with you, and this is how we're going to join you in this fight.
All right then, Jasmine, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, then. Again, folks, you're right. I keep making the point, so-called liberal Hollywood, yeah? Mm-hmm. Let's see if you can open your mouth on this one.
Yeah, exactly.
And that won't be happening. All right, then, folks. When we come back here, first of all, when we come back, we got, of course, Wildin' Out Wednesday. You hear from our comedians. A little fun. Also, right along, too, King of the Box Office. Speaking of black actors, black director, black producer, plus a sneak peek at John Legend's new TV drama about the Underground Railroad. All of that next on News One Now, TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Birthday shout-out time. Roots drummer Questlove turns 45. Actor Reno Wilson from the Mike and Molly series turns 46. Actress Stacey Dash, she's still at? On Fox News all the time. She turns 49. Of course, Margaret Avery, who plays Suge in The Color Purple, turns 72. All right, folks, on this day in history, in 1920, Zeta Phi Beta sorority was incorporated at Howard University. In 1954, the National Negro Network is founded, becoming the first black-owned radio network in America. In 2001, Colin Powell becomes the first U.S. Secretary of State, first African-American U.S. Secretary of State, when he is appointed by President George W. Bush. All right, folks, it's Wild Night Wednesday. And I recently sat down with comedians Ty Reynolds, Tasha Tummings, and Denny Live. And Denny got a little sensitive when Tasha made fun of his little height.
I'm actually taller than Kevin Hart, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's a good standard.
I gotta say that nationally.
Here we are at what level?
Everybody wants to make fun of people's height all the time. No. This is crazy.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I like it too.
That's okay.
I like
my legs don't touch the ground either.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm sitting by two grown men in booster seats. Yeah. I'm so confused on what's happening right now.
Oh, she taking shots.
I know, right? This is
trade.
Black on black crime, as we had all that positivity earlier.
All right then, folks. Let me ask you about this here. So a group of restaurant workers in New Jersey cried tears of joy and one even quit his job when they thought they won the Powerball on Saturday. The numbers they bought for Saturday corresponded with the previous Wednesday's draw. So it wasn't a match. A video from Grassini's in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey shows the co-workers embracing each other over what they thought were the winning numbers.
That's so
mean.
I know that.
Somebody
cussed their
boss.
So turn it up, y'all. We want to hear this.
That was awesome.
Black. This one's black.
Hold on.
Come on. So, y'all, they thought they won.
Yes.
How does that fool who quit his job You know, he probably cussed the boss out, too.
Oh, yeah, he did a whole lot probably of things. So. That he left.
You just come into work the next day and act like nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Grab
no
your
question.
Broom, start sweeping the floor. I don't know what happened the other day. I was tripping.
Just completely ignore. You had Alzheimer's.
Come punch right in like nothing happened. Because you haven't officially quit till you don't come back the next day.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. Oh, that's how it works?
No.
So you got experience at this?
Yeah, I've done it.
Oh, yeah?
I've done it.
I thought you won the numbers, and then
they told me I was hired at the Roland Martin Show.
Oh,
this is my new job.
Aww.
I was making all this money, and I quit my day job. Then I realized
I don't know who the hell told you that.
Somebody.
Mm-mm. What a sad story.
Did you pay the Powerball? Did you play?
I just can't imagine though. You getting that excited, and you thought you won, and then somebody went, "Say that." They pulled a Steve Harvey. Yeah, I messed up. That was my fault. That actually was from Wednesday.
Double check your tickets. Make sure, don't get so excited that you quit on the spot. Check the numbers at least 75 times before you quit.
Right.
How many people were involved with that they just did not get
like
to understand
eight?
No, it? That's
right.
A lot of slow
right.
people.
Right. Well, we'll blame it on the person who also can't read the date on the doggone Powerball ticket. All right, let me ask you this question. So inmate Derek Lathan. Y'all ain't got to show the photo. I knew he was black.
Derek.
He filed a claim against the Correctional Reception Center in Orient, Ohio for harassment and emotional distress.
Oh.
He claims a guard refused to let him go to the bathroom.
I can see it.
Causing him to soil his pants and other inmates to bully him.
That's so terrible.
Judge David Kane threw out the case with the five stanza poem. Here is the second stanza of the poem. While in line for recreation and little time for hesitation, his anal sphincter just exploded. The plaintiff's britches quickly loaded.
Oh, my God.
That's foul. That's foul. I mean, come on. That's
so petty.
He a poet and didn't even know it.
That's foul. That's foul when the judge is throwing shade.
That's petty. Did they put some music behind the poem? That would have been nice if the bailiff would have put a little bit of music to it.
But that's
That's why
I mean, emotional.
You trying to go to the court for relief.
Right.
My bad.
I think he should have got relief before he went to the court.
Right.
That's the problem.
But come on.
Should you feel
bad? You can't be a judge taunting people like that.
That's one of the
best
things about being a judge.
Yeah, you can.
You can do whatever you please.
He already got bullied.
That's out of pocket. That's definitely out of pocket.
Will he pee on himself again? Will he relieve himself again?
Come on now.
But look at the positivity in this story.
Tell us.
This is telling black people that prison life is not for them. This is going to severely reduce the crime rate, I believe.
Well, here's the deal, though. So this next person, he's going to have to deal with that. Shelly, go to the iPad. Y'all, you see the photo on the left?
Yeah.
Is that French Montana?
This brother was a fugitive from the law. So when they posted his photo, he said he saw it. And he said, "I don't like the photo y'all posted." So this fool took another photo and posted it on social media and sent it to the cops.
Ah.
So on the left is the old photo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. On the right is the new photo.
He's
been apprehended.
Yeah.
How dumb are you to say, "I don't like the photo y'all have published on the most wanted list"? I got another one.
I believe he's one of the people that bought that ticket for that Powerball on the wrong day.
That is just pure craziness.
I don't think
they took a bad picture.
You put your cute picture up,
but you don't want to go to jail.
I didn't think it was a bad picture.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
But how you going to send the cops an updated photo?
Look, he didn't want to be put out there like that.
You're not going to make me look ugly and send me to jail, too.
You can't do both.
You can't be in your car. Say, dog, you know, that wasn't
right.
Good.
I'm going to take a selfie.
It actually looks like somebody took the picture of him. That wasn't a selfie.
No, that was down low.
Yeah. Oh,
no, girl, I'm a pro at this.
One thing you don't want is be handsome. Look,
teach me. I'm ready.
Right, but I mean, how dumb are you to say, y'all photo, that ain't a good photo. I wasn't shaved. I was smiling like kind of goofy in the photo. So let me go ahead and get my, right, okay. Right, right. You know when he get to jail, they gonna say, how'd he caught you? Say that.
Okay. All the
I was on Twitter.
Right to him.
Yeah. I was on Twitter, and I forgot to turn my location on.
Picturize myself.
Oh, I can't stand some dumb people. Uh-huh. I can't stand dumb people.
Well, they locking them up. It's good.
That was pretty dumb.
That was dumb.
That was pretty dumb. That was pretty dumb. All right, we come back. We're going to talk right along. And also the new series, Underground on WGN, next on News 1 TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Maya, what the hell is that guy doing?
Shoot your face!
This is Alonzo, my explosive guy.
Give a damn. Put it down, man.
Alonzo, holster your weapon, man.
All right, that's a clip from the Kevin Hart Ice Cube sequel, Ride Along 2. Folks, number one at the box office. Final numbers are in. It grossed nearly $40 million. That right, it surpassed Leonardo DiCaprio's Oscar-nominated film, The Revenant. Also, the box office smash Star Wars The Force Awakens, which had the top spot for four straight weeks. Shout out! To my frat, Will Packer, the producer of the movie, another number one film, plus director Tim Story. So, way to go. Folks, WGN, they've announced the air date of their new series called Underground. John Legend is one of the executive producers. It stars Jurnee Smollett, Bell, Aldis Hodge, and Krista Maloney. It centers around a group of slaves who plan an escape from a plantation in Georgia. They are aided by an abolitionist couple running a station on the Underground Railroad. Here's a clip.
I've been a slave all my life. 25 years, 300 months. I'm done waiting. It's time to act, but I can't do it alone.
As long as we're together, we can do anything.
Underground, folks, will air on WGN on WGN America on March 9th. Not bad there.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
All right, then. So some people like me, I'm tired of slave movies like we've had so many. It's called American History. Read a book and watch the show. All right, folks, I appreciate it. Thanks so very much. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Hi!
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.